Look, I'm going to level with you. I have my own things to deal with. After all, we are about to have a lovely landing.
The Orphans, an original cinematic audio drama, is now available. And now, The Orphans Facility, an exciting new prequel series. Catch up with Season 1 with new episodes of Facility coming bi-weekly.
The following program is presented by Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science to technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
I'm Tony.
I'm Boar.
And I'm John.
And this program is going to talk about all the latest things that's been going on in our personal worlds and also things that we personally find relevant in the nerd world.
Oh my. Oh dear.
Tony, it's been a little bit since you've been on a proper nerdy show.
It has been a long bit, a lot of bit.
I would not even bother to figure out when the hell that was. But it's a while.
I've grown a beard.
Yeah,
in the meantime.
Whoa, what?
Yeah. Tony's got a beard now, John. He drives a Mini Cooper, even though he's very tall.
I am an oxymoron. Emphasis
work?
On the moron.
And there's a lot of contradictions about you.
Yes, that also. Well, it's not just my OxyContin addiction and the fact that I'm a moron.
What's new, Tony?
Many things. Myself, for one, I have stripped all of my clothes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can tell right now, there's only one Tony in the building. Little Tony is safely in bed. He's tucked in right now.
I appreciate you giving him a cot to lay on.
Let's see if we can coax him out with a little imagery exercises.
Or we could skip over that part and talk about the new things. A little. I can't remember the last time I was on. So I bought a house in the last year.
Okay.
I bought a car.
Has
which
it really
I am driving.
Been that long?
I don't know.
I don't know. Couldn't possibly have been. But proceed.
House is great.
Uh-huh.
Still married.
Uh-huh.
Very happily married. House is awesome. I said that already. Car is awesome because Mini Cooper, despite the fact that I work at a car dealership, I have no interest in cars. There's only one car that has ever captivated me.
Captivated me.
I am slowly discovering that I am dyslexic. But no, the Mini Cooper is what I have loved, and one just kind of fell into the dealership's lap that made perfect sense for me. So I had no choice but to part with a severe sum of money and take it home.
Perfect. Okay.
other than that, been arting as much as I can, been working a whole heap, which if you'll recall from Cool Runnings means a lot.
I've actually never seen Cool Runnings.
Really?
Listeners at home, you know what a heap means. A whole heap. Just think of Dougie Doug and you'll understand how much I've been working.
But yes, really.
Oh, okay.
I never happened. Sometimes you don't see things that are, you know, culturally significant like Cool Runnings. I didn't avoid it. I just didn't see it, you know?
Yeah, happens sometimes.
But I know a lot about heaps, too, mainly because scientific progress cannot move forward without heaps. Everybody know that.
Absolutely. Been doing a lot of Tony stuff. Still try and play video games, watch TV shows when I can.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about some of those things on this episode. So.
Absolutely, so I won't talk about them now.
Well,
but let's say
we're going to talk about Spider-Man.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about...
The Dragon Prince.
Yeah, the Dragon Prince.
The Dragon Prince, the latest show from Aaron Ehas, the head writer of Avatar The Last Airbender. I believe he worked on Korra as well. I don't remember.
I looked in his Wikipedia. It didn't go to the IMDb, but it did not mention Korra. Because he went back to Futurama, he may have not done Korra at all.
Which, the fact that he was on Futurama for as long... Like, I didn't realize how much of my favorite television shows this guy has been a part of. Which is still only two, but they're very significant shows to me. They're very significant shows. And I'll... Sneak preview, I liked The Dragon Prince. So, I'll tell you why later.
Cool. We should also mention something else that you're doing. We talked about it a little bit last episode of Nerdy Show, mm-hmm. And that is you did some art for Palette Swap Ninja's live show.
Yeah, for Princess Leia's Stolen Death Star plans, which they are playing with a full orchestra.
Yeah, so let's just mention that again now, because that's super cool. Princess Leia's Stolen Death Star Plans was one of the top 20 nerdy things of last year. It's a full parody record parodying the entirety of Star Wars A New Hope, and also the entirety of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Simultaneously, it's one of, like, in the short history of human parody, I feel like it's upper echelon. It's a mm-hmm. genius pairing. And they are having the opportunity to perform this live. It's as musically complex as the Beatles original, and unfortunately it wasn't able to be recorded that way because they're just two dudes doing it in their spare time. But now, now they're doing a live performance, a live album, and a live t-shirt.
Yeah, well, the people in the t-shirt are live. Uh-huh. And I have it on good authority that Ken Levine of Bioshock fame has bought one of these t-shirts.
Dope. How's that make you feel, Tony?
It makes me feel pretty good. it's pretty fucking nifty. Me and Dan are good buddies at this point. Dan Amrich, half of Palette Swap Ninja. And he reached out to me to like my artwork, wanted to see. He thought I was uniquely suited to bring this, like, animated Disney-ish look to the project, and thought it would make a really cool ad for people as they're trying to raise money to fund everything, because, as mentioned, they're two dudes trying to rent out a space that fills 600 people.
Yeah, this is a show that's happening regardless, but they do need some financial support retroactively. It's kind of like a Kickstarter without the buildup. It's just sort of there. So
yeah,
we'll link on this episode's page to where you can go. You can donate to them just to make it happen. It'll secure you a digital copy of the record, the live record when it comes out. The actual record is free right now. Mm-hmm. But then also you can buy a t-shirt that goes towards donation, or you could actually go. It's October 20th, which is a Saturday, at UC Berkeley in the Hertz Hall, performed by the Awesome Orchestra Collective. And Hertz Hall was designed for symphonic music, so chances are good that even if you've seen things like the Zelda Symphony or whatever, it actually wouldn't even remotely sound as good as this weird thing.
It is a unique opportunity for those of you who do get a chance to go, and I'm rather proud of how the shirt came out.
It looks tight. I like it. I like it a lot.
That Chewy, man. I like Chewy. Came out good. Leia came out. It's good. It's good, friends.
Well, we'll link to all that on this episode's page again.
Yay, yay.
And how about you, John? What's new with you? I heard, little bird told me, you stepped on a big piece of glass today.
I mean, yes. That always got the glass that always gets down. Anyway, the point is, I'm fine now. But seriously.
Okay, well, congratulations. I guess there wasn't a story there, otherwise you would have told it.
No, the story was going, oh God, not again! And then yanking out a massive piece of glass from the bottom of my foot and putting, you know, a bandage on it.
Well, sounds like a real pain.
It was. There was blood.
It was a pain in the glass.
Yeah.
Wordplay. Friends, wordplay.
Disturbing. Anyway.
They ain't the best.
It's the pain in the glass that really hurts the soul.
You took that. You took some new steps in comedy there.
I did. I'm a real heel.
No, I've just been taking anti-aging drugs.
Does that help with the foot?
I mean, probably, actually. But, you know, I mean, obviously it wasn't for glass and feet.
Well, John, you're always following the hot new trends on life extension and cutting-edge technology in the realms of digital preservation, genetic manipulation, discovering the pieces of the body that are associated with the actual aging process and cellular degeneration. You're always sending me articles on that, but you're taking anti-aging pills. What on earth? I mean, everything's bleeding edge medical science. What on earth do we have now that can actually slow aging?
Well, the whole key there is that basically, like, this is the first thing that has actually been really legitimately available and actually backed up with bazillions of papers showing safety and that it actually works. So,
okay. Like, I've actually read into a lot of different anti-aging, you know, breakthroughs and pills and whatnot.
Because Boar is eternal. Boar is all. Praise Boar.
Yeah. And actually, I'm currently taking some that have been shown in some of those studies before. But I'm really interested. What is the actual thing that you're taking?
Nicotinamide riboside.
Ah, okay. I've taken that before.
Why'd you stop?
It didn't seem to be doing much.
Well, I mean, of course it's not going to, right?
Yeah, I guess.
It keeps you level.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was also very expensive at the time.
But no, the stuff is basically all about NAD, which is extremely important to basically everything in your entire body, and not just your body, pretty much anything alive's body, just about. In biology, when we're talking about evolution, we normally talk about, like, you know, something having been conserved evolutionarily. That means that it's literally so paramountly important to life that it is almost never changed, even, you know, between here and flatworms and yeast and plants, right? And NAD is one of those things because it's absolutely fundamental to us having a metabolism at all, us being able to create cellular energy, full stop. Basically, it's used in the mitochondria, it's used making ATP and all that kind of stuff, but it's also used, it's basically consumed in numerous enzyme operations. It's just basically used everywhere. I mean, it is literally used just about everywhere in the cell. So okay. A lot of the capacities for our body to repair itself, to specifically repair DNA, to protect against cancer as a result, because, you know, the vast majority of those seemingly are caused by DNA damage, though there is a little bit of talk about it being some sort of a long-term byproduct of inflammation, that kind of stuff. But the whole point is like, it's necessary for your energy, it's necessary for your repair, it's necessary for all of these cellular processes. And so ultimately, as you age, what winds up happening is that, you know, it's a balancing act, right? So you need X amount of NAD, but ultimately there are levels, although they're excessively high, where maybe you should tone that back a bit, right? So the problem is that the body is actually using it up at increased rates, right? So you're receiving more damage over time, and it's literally just consuming the molecule to fuel that. But it's also taking it out because the molecule that's responsible for basically regulating the level is being increasingly produced by your cells. And so as a result, your NAD levels lower over time as you age. There's a second thing I've been taking, which is a God, I'm going to butcher the ending of this, but Taro Stilbini. Anyway, it's basically okay. Like hyper-resveratrol. I think it's basically like four times as effective as resveratrol. And the important part about
I take resveratrol. That's one of the ones that I still take. That one.
Well, maybe you should be taking this other one then, huh? Since it's
you're gonna have to hook me up with your sources on some of this stuff, because back when I first started taking some of this stuff, it was just ridiculously expensive, and then I got kind of a lower paying job, and so I kind of paused. But
The whole thing is like, the reason why I'm taking these two is because it's actually the key components behind one of these drugs from, what is it, like Elysium or something? I think it's called like
Elysium. Basic. Yeah.
Now they got into a bit of trouble, and the actual drug manufacturer that makes the nicotinamide riboside for them basically like wound up cutting them off after they were shits or something weird, and so there's kind of a falling out. And so I wind up taking True Niagen, which is actually, like I said, the literal drug manufacturer that made the drug for the other people in the first place. And then I also take this Taro Stilbini, which essentially means that I'm taking the full thing, roughly speaking. Though I've sort of like taken half of the recommended dose because I'm, of course, like, you know, only a 30 something and not like a 70 something. So I'm kind of matching it to where I feel, generally speaking, you know, my age would be, to get me back up to like what I'd feel like a good level would be. Right. Not overdoing
so
it.
You're saying that Elysium and Basic are all like are now a lesser product, potentially outright bullshit. But they were at one point legit.
What I'm saying is I don't know what their source of the main drug component is anymore. And there was random anecdotal information from reviews where people were like, I was taking this and I felt fantastic and one day I wasn't. And then I looked into it and I found out that they had changed suppliers or something. It was this huge deal. So then I found out that the original source was this and I feel great again. So
where does someone go to acquire these big named drugs and supplements a la carte? I mean, can we link to those on this episode's page? You have to go to the back alleys and like make deals with rogue scientists.
Well, luckily we sell all these nutraceuticals here at nerdyshow.com/nutraceuticals.
Okay.
I get them on the Amazon, honestly, but, you know, whatever.
I was unaware that we'd actually started producing vitamins in meat space.
And remember,
but,
vitamins
but, hey,
are made out of 100%
so.
Minerals.
That's right. Those are heavy metals. They increase your body mass so that you can really punch through anything.
Back in the moon mission, they collected only a whole bunch of rocks and sent them back. And every mooneral contains a little bit of the moon.
I wash it down with an energy-packed shot of Dilk.
That's right.
God.
Dilk Plus, specifically. I actually, I need that extra boost in my life. So I use Dilk Senior Plus. It has the extra bone strengthening nourishment that I need to make sure that I don't turn into a brittle old sack of shit.
Yeah, Dilk. It's 100% locally sourced from free range male dogs.
That's right.
Don't believe nothing your dog tells you.
But so, like, here's the whole thing, though. This other thing actually creates... No, I'm just saying, like, seriously, it's crazy. Because, essentially, they actually work together. That's the reason why Elysium made their basic combination with the two, right? It's because the one acts as a fuel source, but the, basically, super resveratrol, we'll call it, actually winds up creating additional... I don't know really what to call them right now. I guess you could say it molecular complexes in the cell that actually do the repair. So the resveratrol-like thing is actually generating more repairing structures, we'll call them, and the nicotinamide is actually going through and providing them fuel to actually operate. So I just wanted to say that, though. Like, that's, like, the whole point. Rat studies...
You gotta take them together because they work...
They work synergistically.
Together well. Yeah. Yes.
I think the one that I took before was a combo.
Yeah, it would probably be basic, and that shit is expensive. Case. And this is literally the same stuff, like pretty much almost exactly the same stuff that they started off with. So, but yeah, like rat studies, 5% longer lifespans just from taking the nicotinamide with nothing else, I don't think. And
5%, you said?
High biocompatibility because it's literally in your body already. It's just at a higher level. And they also proved that it actually gets into the blood, and through all the rat studies proved that getting into the blood also gets it into the cell. So unless there was some sort of, like, huge crazy thing, basically it should work. And, like, so many
now,
animal studies.
If you want it to get in your blood, is there a benefit to putting it in your butt instead of taking it orally?
I mean, really, no, because the whole point is they literally performed a test where they took it orally and it got into the blood. And so, like, you know, I mean... there are
a lot
of people
that
do things,
back up just a little bit, though. Did you say 5%?
Yes. Yeah, 5% in years of living without any other types of supplementation or anything.
Okay, that's just by itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so how many percent would you say is added on with the combo, like the cocktail that you're
taking?
That's
the whole thing. I mean, you know, literally who the hell knows? It would enhance DNA repair. So it'd probably stem off some levels of cancer, increase overall functionality. I mean, like, we just don't know. And the worst part is like 5% of rat life, what the hell does that even mean to humans anyway? Like, we don't have any comparisons, and we never will, and you'll die before you get
you
those
results.
You could
be the clinical trial.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'll find
we
out
want
by
you
accidentally
to leave an
be
extra
like
5 to 10%
or something, right?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I kept taking the resveratrol, is because not because it had me feeling more alive or whatever, but it's like a very potent antioxidant, so it supposedly helps stave off like cancers and helps heal.
Well, and that winds up being
like
the whole thing. Basically, it winds up battling like inflammation and a lot of stuff like that too.
I like how we've gotten to the point now where rather than just taking pills when we're old to live longer, we're taking pills when we're young.
You know why? Because this is Nerdy Show and we're fucking smart.
And
I'm just
also
saying,
a healthy dose
you're
is
never,
ridiculous.
You're never too young to have one of those Monday through Sunday pill bottles. To know exactly what you got to take
that's
every day.
That's true.
I mean, just take one of everything every day.
Figure one of them's got to cancel the other ones out. You'll be all right.
I read that exactly. Dr. Seuss book about getting old, and I was like, man, those pills look delicious.
That's true. You know what? You're only old once does really glamorize taking a shit ton of pills because Dr. Seuss made them look so fucking appetizing. That's one of those books that you should probably keep away from children because it really does present a compelling argument.
Leave your father alone. He's bringing down a 6 chewable income.
Well, what are you up to these days, Boar? It's been a whole 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been so long since you've heard from me. But in that short span of time, I traveled back home to the Illinois.
Oh.
Is it getting better?
No.
The noise?
It's getting worse.
Is it still ill?
No, but I spent the weekend in Illinois because my little sister got married, which is weird that, you know, my youngest sibling is married and I'm not, but
oh, the humanity.
No, I don't really.
You're so humiliated.
I don't really care about that, but I was lucky enough to be going
back. You shall never be a bride.
That I hope is true. I very much hope that that is true. But my trip coincided with Monroe, Wisconsin's cheese days.
No.
Oh, boy.
And so I got to take a little bit of time to take a detour up to cheese days and grab some fried cheese curds and a cream puff. And they were the most delectable fair treats that I've ever had. And they were just as wonderful as I remember. And the miraculous thing about this happening is that these cheese days only happen once every 2 years.
Oh, shit.
So not only did I get lucky that it took place while I was taking a trip during the year, but also lucky that it wasn't an off year.
What I assume it has something to do with the Earth's relative position in some kind of astral cycle. When the moon shines full like a wheel of cheese and the cheese is ripe for the plucking.
They have to wait for the moon to be low enough for the cow to jump over it.
Yes. So is that correct?
Well, I think it's because of the long period of time it takes to make certain cheeses that, you know.
Sir, I don't want your rational answers.
We deplete so much of the cheese during these cheese days that it takes them 2 years to refill the cheese stores.
And that makes perfect sense because I've got two new managers at the dealership that are both from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they have brought cheese curds down in the past.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. I didn't realize cheese could be that much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheese curds are amazing. And
Wisconsin in particular is like, holy shit.
Yeah, if you can get fresh fried ones from like a fair or a festival in the Midwest, preferably up near, at least near Wisconsin, you're going to get some amazing fried cheese experiences. And people are like, oh, is it like a mozzarella stick or something? No, it's not anything like that. And you shut your mouth. You've never had a good fried cheese if that's your only frame of reference.
Don't start shitting on mozzarella stick now.
I'm not shitting on them. They're fine if you're at Fridays and that's all you know, but, you know.
I've had some that were so
you haven't eaten any good fried cheese yet.
Just
if that is all.
I mean,
you
it sounds
have.
Like the way I might talk about, say, Swedish chocolate. I now know the difference from experience and there's a very severe difference.
You mean Swiss?
Swiss. Why did I do that?
I don't know.
Because the Swedes were there.
It's a long day. Swiss chocolate, not the lesser known delicacy, the Swedish chocolate.
And now you
we
know why I
Swedish
said,
fish in them.
Now you know I asked for you to bring me back some because I've had it before. And once you have a taste for it, you want more.
Yeah. Here's what's going on with me. My already busy life of wheeling and dealing two podcast networks and trying to finish the Call of Cthulhu mystery program for a debut sometime in October. I'd really love to tell you exactly when, but fuck, I don't know yet, and I can't commit to a date because there's all kinds of things going on. Well, we're also got another added complication in that we're doing some plumbing here at the Nerdy Show studio, which is also my home. But a brand new thing that's happened is that we actually had the opportunity to buy the home that Nerdy Show is recorded in.
Hooray!
Yeah. Woo-hoo! So that we have a truly permanent recording facility. I guess we've had it for the past 6 years, but now it's official. And that's
put
so
a
that,
ring
that's,
on it, huh?
We sure did. But
a plumbing ring.
We bought it as is. Our landlord, I won't say that he was a particularly negligent individual, but he loved to cut a corner or two, and so the house has a lot of things that need doing. Let's just go ahead and say he was somewhat negligent. Anyway, we're repiping the entire house, and I just found out this afternoon, just a couple, like an hour and a half before recording, that I'm gonna have to vacate my office, the epicenter of everything I do, get all that shit out of there, all the mountain of comic books in the way, all the books, the bookshelves, and of course my desk and everything associated with it. Got to get that out of there tonight for a bright and early session tomorrow where they're gonna tear a bunch of holes in the wall. Everything's pandemonium. So hey, folks, fingers crossed.
Wow,
Cthulhu's chugging along. I feel very enthusiastic about it. We will definitely be out in October. I can't say when.
October 31st at 11:59 p.m.
I really fucking hope not, but you know, we're getting it through. Hopefully soon we'll be able to confirm some actors who will be subbing in for NPC characters.
Is it Nicolas Cage? Tell me it's Nicolas Cage.
No, he's busy with an amazing looking movie called Mandy right now. Everyone should check out the trailer for Mandy. It looks incredible. Have you seen it, Tony?
I have not, but I also know he's playing Spider-Man Noir in the upcoming the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. Mandy's a weird horror film. Check out the trailer. We'll link to it if I remember to link to it.
Okay, bye. Understood.
But here's the other thing. I mean, there's all kinds of, look, my life is crazy, but it's also, there's also a lot of, so there's so many good things happening that, that it's hard for me to, I feel shitty if I ever complain about anything, because everything's actually pretty rad. I'm doing really cool work, you know.
Yeah, you're fulfilled.
It's a give and take relationship, and I'm really stressed, and I just want to go to sleep right now. But hey, we got a show to finish, so let's do that.
Hooray!
But I had a bucket list opportunity recently to speak with one of my favorite people in the whole world, an artist whose work has influenced me in really profound ways. Far more than most, honestly, and that's David Byrne, the former front person for Talking Heads.
What?
He wrote and directed my favorite film of all time, True Stories, which if you've ever seen me speak about Earthbound in any capacity, I always inevitably mention, because the two are very similar to each other in their bizarre, funny portraits of Americana. And True Stories has been the most... aside from my affection for it, it's the film that I know that's been treated the worst by DVD distribution and so on. It has a menu, but it's not really a menu. Its menu is a Warner Brothers logo and a button with crunchy edges that says play all and scene selection. Like,
oh dear.
It's been budget released forever. Anyway, it's an incredible film. I highly recommend it. And here's the good news. All of my hopes and dreams come true. If you folks have heard my solo episode from December, where I interviewed Barry Levinson about his 1992 film Toys, these films are relatively of equal importance to me in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And you know, everything I talked about how Toys deserved a Criterion edition, and all the things I want mm-hmm. from it. There's so much more to do there. Well, True Stories has been, you know, it's had the bare bones Laserdisc release. It's had a bare bones VHS release. Because what else is there? But and the DVD release is like is a fart in the universe. But it is getting a Criterion release with deleted scenes, old features that I've never seen before, new features that are new, so of course I've never seen them before, and a complete score/soundtrack. Every piece of music that's in the film, one of the collections of music was only released on vinyl and cassette. A bunch of more of it was never released at all, though it was supposed to, but the film was barely a blip on anyone's radar when it came out. It was totally forgotten. So this is like one of those dreams you have where mm-hmm. like that's based around like a product that you might want. Like one time I dreamed about a Ninja Turtles action figure I really wish existed.
Yes.
And then I woke up and it was like, ah, damn it. You know, in the grand scheme of things, this doesn't matter. It's just an action figure. But gosh, it'd be so cool if that existed. Mm-hmm. This is every hope and dream I could ever have about my favorite film of all time is happening with this Criterion release coming out in November.
Do you need one of us to pinch you just to make sure?
Trust me, I've done it myself enough, but I spoke with David Byrne about this.
That is awesome.
And the interview is debuting in text and podcast form in November. It's embargoed to then, but I did have a really special moment that, much like that one time I interviewed Phil Collins about that one time he scored the theme song for a game show in Miami Vice and played that here on Nerdy Show, I wanted to share a little teaser for everybody. I don't know what podcast this is going to debut in. I think probably Consequence of Sound's titular Consequence of Sound podcast feed is where it's going to end up. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll let you know when it happens. But here's a clip of a very special moment that, I'll let it speak for itself. The film has an ending title card, which reads, "If you can think of it, it exists somewhere." And I was curious where that came from, ending the film with that buried little message there, if you recall what that was all about.
Now, of course, I can't remember. It sounds like something I may have written down somewhere on a post-it note or whatever. And Tibor Kalman, who was doing the end credits and the titles and all this stuff, saw it and said, "Hey, can we put this in here? Can we use this?" And it sounds like one of those things.
Hmm. It's not too dissimilar from the internet rule, Rule 34. Are you familiar with that?
No, what's that?
That's, if you can think of it, there's porn of it.
I wonder if that's actually true. I'm not sure I want to verify that.
Speaking personally, it has limits, but, you know.
Yeah. There's an artist here, Vic Muniz, who once said, "My ambition is to make a claymation porn feature." I thought, go ahead, you go ahead. That's probably one of the most disgusting things I've ever heard.
A perfect medium for it. It's claymation, so visceral.
Yes, yep.
That's amazing. I want a claymation porn so bad. Like,
I'm just impressed that you introduced David Byrne to Rule 34.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's ultimately why we're here. I'm that person now. I get to be that person for the rest of my life.
For the rest of his life, too.
Yeah. It's a small achievement, but...
with long-lasting consequences.
We'll see.
That is a proper consequence of sound right there.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So,
oh my.
You know, I didn't know where that was going for
you
sure.
You were tickled
but
turquoise.
It's a good time to be able to show somebody something that's special and repugnant.
You've interviewed almost every single person you ever actually cared about.
Yeah, I know.
I don't. What are you even going to do now?
I don't know. I'm gonna start an interview series where I use various medium techniques and Ouija boards to interview like David Bowie and Robert Palmer and all the people I missed out on.
Either that, or in the interest of balance, you got to go interview people you hate.
You just need to find that mirror from Gulliver's Travels with the blood and whatever.
What? I don't remember that.
Oh yeah, it was one of the weird chapters, I think. Is that, or it's blurring together with something else? Anyway,
there's also the mirror from the new Beauty and the Beast movie, because that just seems to be like hideously overpowered.
Does it allow you to summon people from the ancient times?
It does.
Yeah, basically, from what I hear.
Wow.
It's a fucking time machine.
It is. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't the mirror. It's a book.
Oh.
He has a book that's able to just like, oh, let's go to Paris the night your mom died. Because that was a thing in the movie.
I'm sorry. Beauty and
I
the
saw
Beast?
It. Yep.
What?
But let's not talk about a movie that's like 2 years old. Let's move on to the future. Let's move on to Spider-Man. Let's talk about Spider-Man.
Spider-Man is so fucking good.
So there's Spider-Man game.
Yes.
A PS4 exclusive.
PS4 exclusive.
I don't have a PS4. Otherwise, I might have. I don't know how I could facilitate this into my life, but I want to.
Wait, I think
It is the first Spider-Man in many years now that is not a tie-in to a movie or some pre-existing story or other property. It is a completely unique take, and it's open world. It's a new story featuring characters, both old and somewhat new, brand new designs and new takes on all the characters within the Spider-Man universe that both pay homage to the history of the character. Dan Slott and Christos Gage either wrote the story or were consultants on it. I have heard mixed reports on that. But developed by Insomniac Games, who did Ratchet & Clank, Resistance Fall of Man, and Spyro the Dragon.
Yeah, I mean, watch any video of this game. I remember the first one that came out around E3. It's shocking how fluid it is, how dynamic it is. There's multiple ways to approach any situation, and the story has enough flexibility in the gameplay. And this is just me talking based on videos I've seen. That there's so much there. And if you are a hardcore Spider-Man fan, you're going to see stuff that you've never seen in the video game medium before, and probably maybe even like some dream Spider-Man moments. Like, for example, I was really thrilled to see that Mr. Negative, one of the newer Dan Slott creations, mm-hmm. is in the game.
Is a central figure in the game, no less. As if you've seen the trailers, the Sinister Six show up with new designs, and while not necessarily as compelling as Michael Keaton's take on the Vulture is here, and he is awesome. It's fucking good.
I think Spider-Man games have always had a really important place in the history of open world gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of them, movie tie-ins included, have been just way more fun than they ever should have been. And have redefined people's experience of what it helped shape what we understood as an open world game. It helped build that.
Raimi's Spider-Man 2 video game tie-in had defined for a long time what web swinging in New York should have been.
Yeah.
Because they made it physics-based, and anytime that he never swung from skyhooks in the ether. He everything was mounted to a building.
Right.
And this takes that on, but adds a fluidity and system of momentum that hasn't been seen in a video game yet, or at least not in a Spider-Man game that I've experienced, and is, for a game like this, the fact that the camera never gets in the way is just fucking mind-boggling. And
that's a hard problem.
Thanks to it's marvelous. There are things from the game that are great, first and foremost being Yuri Lowenthal as Peter Parker, Spider-Man.
I did not realize Yuri was doing that. That's amazing.
It is apparently a dream project for him.
Well, I bet. Anyone who's as like quick-witted as somebody like him,
yeah,
like Spider-Man's at the top of your list of like franchise characters I would like to be someday.
And he does an amazing job. Like, I have always liked Yuri Lowenthal from before we had an opportunity to interview him, and especially after we had an opportunity to interview him all those years ago. He sells this character. He disappears into Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't Yuri playing Peter. This is Peter Parker, and he's fucking fantastic. You also have one of the most entertaining takes on J. Jonah Jameson that I have seen in media recently.
That's interesting. That's a really high bar.
He is an Alex Jones type character.
Oh no! Wait, is he as he's presented in the comics these days? Is he on Fact Channel?
Yes.
Oh my God!
He is on Fact. He has his own podcast.
And of course he does.
You are subscribed to it, and he will have. Oh, it's marvelous.
Oh no!
There are two small touches that are great. Peter Parker, Spider-Man has a Twitter account or a Twitter facsimile account that you can check throughout the game that reacts to the things you do in the game.
Uh-huh.
And there is also J. Jonah Jameson will come up with new episodes that react to what you're doing. And it'll either be like him interviewing somebody, trying to pick apart who Spider-Man is, and then being like, no, Spider-Man didn't cause the bus crash. He saved my mom from it. He's a hero. And he's like, we're having a bad connection. Get out of here. Or if you ignore too many crimes as you're going along, people will call in to his show and be like, yeah, Spider-Man just swung right by. You're right. He is a menace.
Ooh, dynamic. I like it.
It's great. And this is a subtle touch, but it's something that I think is absolutely fascinating. They record every line of dialogue that Spider-Man has as interstitial dialogue from when you're going from place to place has two recordings of it. One of he's standing on the ground and one of he's swinging and exerting himself.
Good.
So
very dynamic. Awesome.
It sounds, and it will switch on a dime. If you own a PS4, you owe it to yourself to get this game.
Like I said, I don't own one.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only game in the history of the PS4 that I've really been like, I might need to buy a game system over this.
They've also got three pieces of DLC coming, the first of which is Felicia Hardy, Black Cat.
Unfortunately, I don't give a shit about her, but
there's
she's a real tough sell for me, like a budget Catwoman, you know.
She's well handled throughout the course of this game.
That's
as
cool.
Are all characters, and it's so lovely. The first thing you do is fight Kingpin. The first thing you do, and the game goes from there.
Again, setting the bar pretty high. That's
Miles
cool.
Miles is introduced. Miles.
Do any other heroes show up, or is it just Spider-Man? Only?
Just Spidey.
Okay.
Just Spidey.
I assume the reason it's a PS4 exclusive is that this is Sony leaning hard into what they can get away with.
Well, it's Sony and Marvel, though.
Spider-Man films, but, you know.
Well, this is the first of the Marvel Game Studios games. And one thing that, I mean, it's easy to knock on Sony, especially with what the Amazing Spider-Man movies wound up being.
Right.
And what Venom could potentially be. I really want to like Venom.
It looks decent, but
it's
boy,
the director of Zombieland.
It
and I don't
shouldn't.
Know.
It shouldn't be. Yeah,
it shouldn't be. But according to the creative director, this game would not exist without Sony.
Like, I mean, I believe them.
They gave full belief, and they did a fan fucking tastic job with it.
Hey, so we need to take this moment to mention that this program and all the programs in the Nerdy Show Network are made entirely possible by you fine folks. Yeah, we might have an ad here and there on shows every now and then, but making podcasts, especially making podcasts for approaching a decade, is hard business.
And everyone's got to get their lunch money somehow.
Yeah, you know, it's a... it gets harder the older you get, it turns out. So thank you for being with us for this journey, and thank you for contributing to us. If you'd like to contribute to us, every dollar counts. It's really important to us. It helps continue to make things possible. Head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. Give us a donation there. If you want to give a one-time donation, there's nerdyshow.com/support. Chances are good you probably shop on Amazon. There's a high likelihood of that. Maybe you subscribe to watch cool shows like The Tick or Man in the High Castle. And if you do, you should do all of your purchasing through our Amazon links at nerdyshow.com/Amazon. But there's also ways to help us out if you don't want to spend any money directly anyway. And that is rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Both are super duper useful. Podchaser is a platform, a new and emerging platform that lets you rate and review not just entire series, but also single episodes. And you can also do tags, and they're introducing specific, like host specific stuff. So you could, I'm still not sure how the system's going to work, but for example, if you clicked on my name, you'd not just see every episode of Nerdy Show that I'm in or every show that I'm associated with, but you'd also be able to see, if provided that the legwork was done for the proper tagging, every show that of any podcast that I've ever guested on, any other place I've been, that goes for any of us.
And you could track the 6 appearances I've made on Nerdy Show in the last 5 years.
Yeah. So, but these are lists that are user generated in part, as well as a little bit of automation. You can help if you love podcasting. It's a great way to work with all that. And we actually have some reviews, some recent reviews from Podchaser that we're gonna read here. First up, we've got one that was a review specifically left by Kausa Balu on our last episode, Cultural Triple Exchange. He actually reviewed quite a few of our most recent episodes, and this is, well, I'll let Boar dip into that.
All right, he writes, in which Boar talks about his time in Spain, his hunt for the elusive Pepsi twist, and we find out that most countries mean toilet in their native tongues. This episode is a fun return to form from the Nerdy Show crew as Cap finally gets people other than themselves to help fill the funny quota.
Which at first I was like, whoa, what? But then I remembered, oh yeah, the prior 4 episodes were all Cap's solo shows. But yeah. I was like, damn, Kusa Baloo, that's cold. We also got a new review just about Nerdy Show, the series in general.
Do we want to have me read this in a funny voice?
Sure. Whatever you think Street Shadows would enjoy the most.
Street Shadows review, Nerdy Show.
Oh, gosh.
I can't speak highly enough of this podcast and the other Nerdy Show Network podcasts. Dungeons, the Doritos, Ghostbusters, Resurrection, and the Call of Cthulhu, Mystery Program, our personal favorites with high-quality content and production.
Oh, thanks.
The Nerdy Show crew are the nerd friends you always wanted. They cover a wide range of topics that are funny, honest, and always interesting. Give it a try.
Thanks, Street Shadows, and thanks, Kusa Baloo.
You were really walking around that pretty awkwardly. Yeah.
Well,
walking around?
What do you want from me?
See what I did there?
Gonna hit you in the face with a tire iron.
You guys are great, and thank you for the high praise, because, yeah, we struggle. In fact, you may have noticed that we didn't put out an episode last week. I thought, you know, once everybody got back to a degree of stability, geographically speaking, things would be fine. Well, Brandon is in Scotland right now, so there's that.
And I flew away for the weekend.
And you flew away for the weekend. It's just evidence things are not slowing down. And even assembling this episode, oh, it was difficult. So let's say, for the time being, and I'm really sorry to do this, the show is not weekly at the moment. This is an every other week show now, and maybe other episodes will happen.
Hard to say.
Hard to say, because there's so much happening right now, my responsibilities are stacking. So I want to be regular, I want to be expected, and we definitely don't want everybody to get like less value out of Nerdy Show, but... Yeah,
and I mean, everyone wants to be regular. Nobody wants to be constipated.
Yeah, I actually, I've turned to steel cut oats. Mm, I've been eating a lot of steel cut oats, and yeah, that increased my fiber intake.
That's some old man logic right there.
Yeah,
personally, I like adamantium cut oats because they're fictional.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you don't like oats?
Yes.
That's too bad.
Fuck them Quakers.
Well, all right. Also, want to give a shout out to Kutsushita, who does gives us a generous one-time donation once a month. Very, very big, very hefty, Kutsushita. Thank you very much. Anyhow, let's move on to some cool shit that is hopefully forthcoming. Well, at least one thing is. We've talked in the past a lot about Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, a really brilliant, disturbing, complex voyage into puppetry and mixed media video art on YouTube. If you've never checked it out, brace yourselves. You can watch all of them in one sitting, and you should.
It's a ride.
Yeah. It's a ride you should take. Would you say it's a ride you should take, Tony?
I would say that. I kind of regret that I did, but also I feel like I needed to, and I have not, like... It sticks with you.
Yeah. Like plain white sauce.
Plain white sauce will make your teeth go gray. Look, if you want to have digital style, then you need to check out this very Lynchian yet extremely colorful Not For Children show.
Yep. And there's some exciting news coming down from the pipe from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared.
Yeah, they have created a U.S. TV version of the web series. I presume that either means 15 minutes or half an hour long, which is crazy. These shows are...
Watch Me as a Show. The fact that they last traditionally, like, what, 5 to 10 minutes?
Tops.
And the ones that last a long time, like, it's horrifying at 5 minutes. They go some weird places when you get longer than that.
Yeah, I'm so... surprised, honestly. I did not think that they were going to do... I thought the creators, Becky Sloan and Joseph Pelling, were going to, you know, probably move on to something else.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get maybe something new.
Yeah, something built for a different format, perhaps. Not that we would get more of what I already like, even bigger, and produced by big-time American money, Turner's Super Deluxe Studio, and Conan O'Brien's Conoco. And Conoco, man, has greenlit some phenomenal projects. For example, Eagle Heart. And more recently, what's that show everybody likes that I haven't seen yet? Final Space. Has anyone seen that here?
I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen that either.
I feel like somebody recommended it to me recently.
Yeah, it's been recommended a lot.
Okay, noted.
Yeah, so anyway, there's no word on where it's going to be yet. I feel like there's a pretty dang good chance that it's going to be Adult Swim, but they're not the only... show in town anymore. There's lots of places for weird
shit
projects to live on actual networks, but as well as streaming. The Spec pilot has been produced and they're shopping it to streaming cable networks. But yeah, what I love is I love how this little thing has snowballed over time. Like this was very cult at one point.
Oh yeah.
But within 24 hours, the preview video that they posted for this, which is called Wakey Wakey. It's just a very short video. Don't expect much from it, just to see that, like, wow, the production value went way up. It got 1.6 million views in 24 hours.
Fuck.
This is not a cult show anymore. This is a authentic phenomenon.
Well, don't hug me. I am scared.
And in terms of cult phenomenons that also moved a lot of product that I love, also was Lynchian. Interesting.
This next announcement is I saw it and was so... I knew you'd be excited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone did. In fact, it was posted multiple times and I was tagged in it quite a bit. Alan Wake is getting developed for television. Alan Wake was an Xbox and PC exclusive, very narrative-driven mystery action game.
By Remedy Studios. Though, with Alan Wake becoming a TV show, isn't that just Twin Peaks?
That's a very valid question, and one that's been brought up a lot in conversation, because Alan Wake was developed and came out long before anyone ever thought there was going to be more Twin Peaks. So what does Alan Wake look like? Alan Wake was built for a world that was never getting a third season of Twin Peaks. So what does Alan Wake look like being created in a world that has that?
I don't know. I feel like we've been sleeping on it, but it's time to wake up.
So it's a very, very valid question, but Alan Wake, and Remedy Studios, I mean, it was always designed television show-esque. There's mm-hmm. lots of TV components to it. It's done in episodes, even the linear game, though it was not a, you know, an episodic download show.
It's broken up into instead of like chapters of a game, it's broken up into episodes with an opening, a recap and everything else.
And then the first like full game follow-up that Remedy developed after that was Quantum Break, which combined video game segments, all again broken up into episodes, with then actual live action TV length episodes in between those chapters that would show you what the villains were doing.
I feel like Remedy is just working their way to producing actual television shows.
I mean, yeah, because ultimately Sam Lake, the guy who's like the big one of the biggest brains behind Remedy, he just loves telling stories. And he, I mean, the interactive component of gameplay, there's a lot of Alan Wake that cannot translate truly, I don't think, maybe, into television. Like, the feeling of isolation as you wander through the woods with nothing but a flashlight to save you, because in the world of Alan Wake, I suppose I should back up in case no one's familiar with it, it's based on, like, it's kind of the idea of, like, what if Stephen King found himself in a situation where his words were coming back to haunt him, and there was like bigger mysteries, literature became powerful, and he became a conduit for dark forces trying to interfere with his world, because creativity holds so much power. And so there are certain places in the world where the rules of what reality are don't operate the same way. So here you, but the darkness is literally coming to get you. Mm-hmm. So when you're wandering out alone in the woods, all you got are flashlights and batteries and sometimes flares.
Specifically Energizer batteries.
That, but hey, it takes a lot of money to get a game made.
And Verizon cell phones.
Yeah. And that one car commercial that obnoxiously plays during a really dramatic scene, and if you like, and you have to get the achievement to watch all the television stations, and if you stop to watch it, it's really distracting. Anyway, they had you know, they needed the money. but you can ignore it. You don't have to get that achievement. You just don't do it. So you use your flashlight as like a weapon. You hold it out and it burns the darkness away from things, but it makes you feel super isolated. It's like being, they draw this comparison visually a lot. It's like being at the bottom of the ocean. You're all alone. Everything, like the darkness itself, it's crushing you, is killing you. And it's such an incredible interactive experience that is also a very narrative, like linear story. So how are they going to bring that to television? Well, lots of ways. And as it stands, they were developing sequel content for a long time that never got made. So they have a much more mapped out. They can expand all of the central characters into, like, naturally, stuff they've already done, to naturally expand it into what would be required to make a television show. Sam Lake is very close to the production. He's executive producer of it. And the showrunner and writer for this is Peter Calloway, who more recently has worked on Legion. Okay. I can't imagine a more perfect marriage than someone operating in the most cerebral television show on network television. Mm-hmm. And also Cloak and Dagger, which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, it seems tight.
So they're not going to tell a story that's lockstep with the game, they've said, but they also said we'll be expanding the lore of this crazy and dark universe and diving deeper into certain aspects of it that will then further than the game ever did. And there's also hope there might actually be future games. Maybe things could be tied in some way, but that's all still very TBD.
Well, excellent stuff. Yeah, that is very exciting.
Exciting shit. I'm so psyched. Dragon Prince, Tony.
Dragon Prince.
I haven't seen it yet. It looks good, though.
9 episodes, all dropped on Friday.
What's the length? 30 minutes?
Between 20 and 25 and 30.
Okay.
25, 30. You can binge it in an afternoon, and it's very easy to do so. In the wake left by Avatar The Last Airbender and Korra, there are a couple of shows that have shown up that are almost successors to it. One being the new Voltron Legendary Defender, because that's also done by Studio Mirror, that did a lot of the Korra animation and a lot of Avatar animation as well. But never quite had the same feel in terms of its story.
Sure. I mean, this is the plight we came up with when we conceived Lightning Dogs, is that dramatic all-ages animation is not something that most studios feel comfortable greenlighting, so there's just not a lot of it out there.
And it's a tough rope to walk, just because it's a tough line to walk, I should say, because you have to be able to balance humor and a heavy storyline. You know, you've got Avatar did it very well because you have a 12-year-old protagonist that simultaneously has to deal with the genocide of his people and the fact that he wants to ride on penguins.
Uh-huh.
You know, it works. It works because it hits that tone. And in watching The Dragon Prince, like, I had seen that it was coming. I wasn't necessarily super enthused about it, especially with early trailers. The animation is done in this, like, pseudo-CG way. It's a CG show, cel-shaded.
Yeah, so it's, if you've seen trailers for Star Wars Resistance, it's not too dissimilar from that. It actually looks a bit better.
But it's very choppy, particularly during dialogue scenes. And it just, the trailers didn't sell me. But it was from Aaron Ehaz, who was the lead writer on Avatar The Last Airbender. And I figured, you know what? I've got some time to kill. Me and my wife were laying in bed. Let's go ahead and give it a watch. And before I knew it, we had watched 4 episodes. It does an excellent job. It's set in a fantasy world. The intro to it is actually very similar to Avatar, because it talks about how they're, instead of, you know, the four nations and their bending, it was the 6 different core elements of magic.
Mm-hmm.
The sky, the earth, the stars, the moon, this, that, the other thing. And a new form of magic that has been discovered. A lot of these magical forces are channeled through harmony with these creatures. You know, it's you're borrowing magic from them. You have to be, in order to use like a lightning storm or a lightning power, you need to have a storm nearby that you can channel it through yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You act as a conduit. And then humans, because we're assholes, discover dark magic, where essentially you take the life and the energy force of this in order to use it.
Sounds about right.
Giant war breaks out. The line is held essentially during the course of this centuries long war by the Dragon King, the Thunderbringer, who is a lightning elemental dragon. He is killed, and his son is, or the dragon egg, his heir, was thought to be destroyed. Enter these two young princes who form an uneasy alliance with an assassin that was sent to kill one of them.
These are the two princes, by spin doctors.
No, I cut it afterwards. And if one of them wanted to buy you flowers, just go ahead then. But these two princes, one of whom is a step prince, meet up with an assassin who was sent to kill their father. They discover this egg is around, so they go out to try and end the war on peaceful terms. And a lot of the same tropes from Avatar are there. You've got adolescent protagonists. Mm-hmm. You've got I wouldn't say cute, but an animal companion that goes along with it, and a good balance of like legitimately heavy topics, because we're introduced as there is an assassination plan for the king, and one of the princes is able to identify that this is coming. And he's having very real conversations with his stepfather about the fact that his stepfather is likely to die. And he's like, we need to figure this out. And it's done in such a real way. Characters, both good and bad, have multi-layered motivations. It is engrossing. It is compelling. The animation is gorgeous. And it's funny because I had a very similar reaction to Avatar when I first started watching that. When I first started watching Avatar, the animation seemed choppy. It seemed like it was trying to ape something that it wasn't. And it didn't sell me. But over time, as you continue watching it and you start learning some of the idiosyncrasies of the way that they animate
Avatar,
the
it's a tough sell for people who haven't seen it before, because it's not great when it starts.
It doesn't seem it anyway. All of it is world building. No, but the first season, when you get to the end of the first season, first off, you've seen just how gorgeously those backgrounds have been painted. You've seen the way that the world plays and how things are set up, and the characters all work together toward this one overarching plot that, while it isn't shoved in your face, is always there in the background. Motivations seem at least clear to me. The characters themselves bounce off of each other very well. It's so natural. The actor who played Sokka in Avatar is here as one of the two princes.
Cool.
And is every bit as charming and perfect in this role as he was as that character. Because this prince in particular is being bred to be, you know, like a warrior prince and this, that, and the other thing. But he's an artist. Like, he draws shit, and he's kind of built to be a mage, but nobody's pushing him down that line. So he feels very out of sorts. And he is the stepson to the king. So
it's if you're so saying good. if you watch one fantasy show on Netflix that came out recently, it should be this one and not Disenchantment.
I wasn't saying that.
Well,
because
I'm going to say that because I haven't seen this dragon show, but man, I don't think I can possibly watch another episode of.
How many have you watched?
I've watched one, and that was enough. Oh. I was so let down by it.
You know, Disenchantment.
I think you should keep going.
You should. Disenchantment hits its stride around episode 3, and then it continues throughout the rest.
It was tough. I love everybody involved with it, but I really didn't. I did not like that show.
Let me put it this way. Disenchantment has a heart. Disenchantment struggles with finding its footing in a world where there are no restrictions.
How did you not like the elves?
I thought they were a cheap joke. Honestly, like nothing for me.
I like a good
working.
Cheap joke here and there.
Every once, a bargain laugh, a bargain guffaw is nothing to be scoffed at.
I mean, I did not laugh the whole time, but it felt to me like all the later era Futurama that didn't land in between the episodes that kicked ass.
Disenchantment again does. I will vouch for it because I did find myself, especially after the third episode, really enjoying it.
Uh-huh.
Dragon Prince had me hooked every fucking episode.
See, my time is at a premium. That's what I want to watch.
So watch that.
Also, watch that. I need to catch up on Voltron. I'm really behind.
So am I. I'm still on like season three.
Yeah, they boy. Yeah, I'm on the one.
And
where,
it's a, the
where they made
it's
milkshakes.
Almost done. October we get the 8th season and that's it for Voltron.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What a weird way to release a show.
And yet there it is. All I can hope is that we get the same sort of
also,
thing with Dragon Prince.
I might add, BoJack just started back up.
Yes, it did.
Oh,
there's that
yeah.
fifth season.
I saw that dropped recently. I think it was over the weekend, wasn't it?
You gotta
it?
Love how Netflix
I think it was
is
like,
just...
like, I mean, time is relative in the world of this yeah. podcast, but yeah, very recently for us, yes.
You gotta love how Netflix is just like, oh yeah, here's everything.
Yeah, I was like, man, I was chilling. There wasn't much I was watching, and now you release all this shit at once. What's wrong with you? Slap you around, Netflix.
Assholes.
Yeah. Why you do this?
Why? But nah, definitely, fair listeners, give Dragon Prince a shot. The animation will grow on you, especially once you meet the deaf ASL speaking badass aunt of the princes, who is like the main warrior character.
People who speak using sign language do not have much in the way of a visual representation at all in anything.
And
so
here's
cool.
somebody who... And there are a couple of scenes. It was most of the time, because this character is interacting with other people, she has an interpreter who speaks along with what she's signing.
Uh-huh.
But there are a couple of times where, or there's one time in particular where she is by herself in front of a statue of her sister. And she says, I have no idea what the fuck she said, but she's by herself signing to the statue the way that we would say to speak to a deceased loved one.
Sure, yeah.
And no subtitles, nothing. It's just there. And it's a very—it's a rich character moment because it sets who this person
that
is.
That must have been a pain yeah. in the ass cool. to actually make, though, like for the developers. All that animation.
Yeah. No, the creators actually did an AMA not too long ago where they talked about how they worked very closely with various professionals in there. They got a lot of photo reference from multiple angles so they could make sure that they were doing it right.
Yeah.
So
nightmare.
I mean, it was
didn't performance capture.
No, they did not. As it turns out, when you're animating on like fours and eights, as opposed to at 24s.
Yeah.
Or on the twos rather. So good shit. I like the Dragon Prince. I like it a lot.
Cool. Well, I think we've got one more big topic to discuss. And John, I mean, we've already touched on a little bit of science thanks to your human experimentation with your own body. But I understand you have something new to tell us about cocaína, a.k.a. cocaine, a.k.a. China White, a.k.a. The Frost Master's Beard, a.k.a.
China White's a type of heroin.
I'm just saying random things. I actually didn't realize.
A.k.a. the source
okay.
of Miami's
there's,
entire
There's black
economy.
Tar and there's China White.
You can tell I don't work in Vice. I haven't used street drugs.
I've watched a lot of television.
Anyway, last time we had a podcast where we consulted some of the scientific side of cocaine, inexplicably that episode entitled Feed Your Brain with Monkeys and Cocaine or Boost Your Brain with Monkeys and Cocaine. That was it. It's inexplicably got a bunch of hits. So yeah, talking about cocaine is good for us. Let's talk about cocaine some more.
So like a couple years back, there was, talk about making a cocaine vaccine and any of the stuff with that.
Whoa, what?
Are you getting vaccinated so you don't catch cocaine? Are you getting vaccinated with cocaine?
It basically makes you immune to the Absolutely. Effects of it so that you alt.
Why would you want
why
that?
Why would anyone
because
need that?
Because you're a drug addict and, they're going to force you to get clean, basically. The end result, of course, was
now,
quite bad because people would still try to get high. So they'd basically blow a bazillion dollars
to
try to get enough to do it. Well, no, because the body's actually processing it so quickly that and destroying it, essentially, that... They don't. They just waste all their money.
Now, would the body work extra hard and would that cause you to lose weight?
It's an enzyme.
Because it's working so hard
anyway,
to break down
that's
the
That's not even the
cocaine.
Point here. So somebody else has been working on it because apparently it's always...
Well, if it was an enzyme, wouldn't it... I don't know. Would it run out or is it one
enzymes
of those enzymes
normally
that
aren't
just...
actually consumed, though there can be obviously situations where they require extra substances, etc.
I just feel like you could shove enough cocaine through your system that the enzyme wouldn't be able to
keep up, like I was saying, that's exactly what they were doing before, and it was really, really bad. So I don't know why the hell there's a completely separate team looking towards a cocaine vaccine kind of situation. But essentially what they did was they literally took stem cells, and this, of course, was done in rats, right? So they took stem cells, they genetically engineered the stem cells to actually express this enzyme that's like over 4,000 times more effective than the body's natural capacity to break down cocaine. And they let them grow into organoids, i.e. like clumps of the cells, basically, and implanted it underneath the skin. They were then, the rats...
So you've got like cocaine processing units inside your body.
And that's really the whole
point. Lumpy tumors.
Because they...
process
cocaine. I'm sorry, what?
Lumpy tumors that process cocaine?
Right. I mean, except they aren't growing, so they aren't really tumors. But yeah, so you have these factories basically in your body that are essentially sitting there and processing the shit out of any cocaine you took. But what's absolutely nutty about this is, to me, is not the fact that it worked, because of course, you know, the rats lost interest. And when they basically gave them lethal doses of cocaine, they survived.
Well, that's probably just moving the bar.
Of course. Except, I mean...
Eat even more cocaine.
Obviously, the bar is now previously very high, right?
Now I'm getting high on lethal doses, and I'm dying on doses that would kill an elephant.
The whole real thing here, because, you know, like, cocaine, whatever. Like, my point is, genetically engineered organoids.
You just talked about an elephant doing cocaine...
I've got a trunk full over here.
I don't know if I've ever seen that. Have they done that in BoJack Horseman? I'm just like a trunk, it's perfect.
A trunk full of cocaine.
This is a perfect cartoon animal anecdotal circumstance in a world of cartoon animals. You gotta have the elephant like doing cocaine with the trunk. That's amazing. That's a good visual image.
1 kilo is one line for an elephant.
I have no idea how we got on elephants, but
you did this. No, Javor bored it. Never mind. what's your hype about is the organoids that have been engineered. And what I'm wondering is,
I still don't understand what this is for.
I mean, like, medical cocaine has a lot of practical applications for normal people who aren't addicted to cocaine. So I guess you want to take drugs to not be addicted to cocaine.
Well, I mean, medical cocaine is it's not even a thing to get high. It just basically opens up the sinuses so they can perform surgeries or look at stuff, etc.
But if you're immune to cocaine, then you can't do that.
Well, actually, I'm not 110% sure. That is a little bit of a weird thing. I mean, I think that's pretty instantaneous, so it might actually not have time to react. And in addition to that, the nose... Well, anyway, not relevant. My whole point is these organoids.
All right. Tell me about the organoids, John. Tell me about them.
You can genetically engineer little fucking weird-ass organ factories and inject them into your body. That means you can have it produce arbitrary compounds.
Wait, what arbitrary compounds do I want them to produce,
John? Antivenom, hormones... I don't know, healing factors, practically. You can make them glow.
Nictotide, riboside, and resveratrol.
Yeah, you can make them produce resveratrol or compensate for levels of NAD.
You could have anti-aging little tumors.
You basically have fucking drug factories in your body then, so you could literally have them manufacture whatever.
Oh my god.
I mean, ironically, you could have them make cocaine in your body.
Now that's the type of innovation that I can get behind.
But no, that's great. I mean, because you're right. Like, yeah, insulin. Holy cow, if that's possible. And then what's like the anti-aging stuff? And for me, like, if I could be constantly, if my body could actually pre-producing the estrogen that I'm not able to biologically make and have to rely on pills, that would be amazing.
And so, I mean, obviously there's a little bit of push and pull with that because your body's always going to try to compensate it with, there is a lot of room for very interesting things happening.
Well, then you just get more organoids.
And you could also use it for sensing, though. Because at that point, theoretically speaking, if they're actually, you know, testing your blood around there, they could...
You could put taste buds in your colon.
You could have them basically produce luciferase and literally light up if it detected a specific chemical. Or you could just have them light up in general. I mean, that's what I'd do, but...
So you could light up the night.
Are you saying like what?
I'm talking about going full
Avatar.
So you can have a
city that this darkness can't hide.
You could have a finger that determines whether or not your food's been poisoned.
I mean, Yeah, but...
Or you could have a finger with taste buds, so you could taste the food by sticking your finger in it.
No, you guys are going too far. That's on the surface. That'd be hard. That's a hard thing to do. I mean, eventually,
in this hypothetical situation wherein we are adding senses to our extremities. God damn it, John. Why not reach for the moon?
Well, I mean, you know, in that case, it's like...
You land among the stars.
Why not just genetically engineer centaurs?
But I thought putting taste buds in your butt was the moon.
They actually...
that is the dark side of the
moon.
That's
why when you eat the really spicy food and you poop, it burns. There's actually nerves down there that are very closely related to taste buds.
Yeah, that is true.
There's nerves down there.
Yeah.
You think. Anyhow.
You are welcome, Tony.
It's a shitty sensation.
What I want to know is, like, are these organoids going to make me extra lumpy? Because that's not necessarily desirable. Sometimes I want a smooth coat, not a lumpy coat.
I mean, you could theoretically make them into sheets. I doubt that they would actually make you lumpy. I mean, they're squishy. So they'll probably just squish.
I mean... You know, like, there's nothing wrong with being lumpy. LSP, for example, is a goddess.
These aren't necessarily, like, dermal implants or something like that. That, you know, your whole point is to become lumpy.
There's always so much room in here, though. Okay, well, when you actually determine the true possibility of generating organoids that can change our whole perspective on what our bodies can or can't do... well, let's record an update, John. Right now, it all feels extremely hypothetical based on a totally unrelated article.
Yeah, but we just came up with so many great uses for them.
And I mean,
we
really, if anything, did. That is basically our specialty.
I can turn my fingers into a Razer keyboard.
What?
I could turn my fingers into a Razer scooter.
I could Razer all of your fingers.
What do you guys
right
always
now?
Wanted in
no,
your fingers?
No, wrong kind of Razer.
Put your fingers on the table.
Listen, I just want to make it so that not only does my keyboard change color and my mouse change color and mm-hmm. my mouse pad change color, that my fingers can too. I want to sit there and I want to be able to plug it in through Razer to have the same sort of color patterns go along so that I can have it glow.
No, listen, you need...
Blow,
you
depending
need...
on how the mood strikes.
You need to get a Philips Hue finger.
But here's how you would actually do that.
Sit there and walk in and say, hey, Google, sensual time. And all of a sudden, my phone actually responded to that. That's great.
And no, here's how it's gonna be. Your nipples are gonna turn into those like gyroscoping like multicolor lights, like disco lights. And then your stomach has a little speaker embedded into it, and some dirty funk music starts coming out of that.
I think the first thing I would program is, "Hey Google, ouch," and then my one finger would light up.
Elliot.
Ouch.
Sorry, John, we derailed you.
What
again.
I was saying was
you,
you actually could make it theoretically change program, assuming that it had all the programs in its DNA in the first place, by theoretically popping a pill, and then it would basically detect that, you know, here's this chemical that's really weird but otherwise biocompatible, and that would act as its signal. So, I mean, like, that would actually be something that would be possible. Yeah.
It'd be like Borg nanoprobes that just reconfigure everything in your body at a nano scale.
You know, here in nanoprobes, like, this is something we could actually do like tomorrow, basically, as opposed to, you know, another 5, 10, 15, 20 years, depending on money and.
So can I go down to CRISPR's right now and get one of these?
Right. CRISPR's, okay. What should be a chicken store. In fact, genetic engineering.
That's it.
While you're at CRISPR's, could you also pick me up a au jus, some of that roast beef with the au jus? It's very good.
I want them maybe. Like 20
John's
herbs
always talking
and
about
spices,
how CRISPR's
going to
change everything. And I found one down by the Publix. There's a CRISPR's right there. So I've been meaning to stop in and get some genetic.
I want my CRISPR with 30 secret spices.
That's just absurd, John.
Well, we've prattled on long enough. I will leave you with a very, very short fragment of a dream that I had. Some details that I woke up with, which I think was I don't know what to mean.
Dreaming.
I dreamed about a remastering of Super Mario Land 1 and 2 that came with bonus worlds. And the only one that I remember is Mario Land 2 had a bonus world called Vape Jelly Land.
Okay.
And I don't this is not a real thing, but the idea was there are these colorful jello-esque cubes that if lit turn into vapor, and in theory, in the world of this dream, there's this would be used for human vaping, but in the world of Super Mario, it's like, you know, colorful valley with these jelly cubes. So you go to Vape Jelly Land, but be careful because, you know, if you impact any of, like, the vape with the fire flower, or the jelly with the fire flower, it vapes. So it just turns into a cloud. You got a destructible terrain. Oh, wow, game innovation. but theming, highly dubious, especially for a fucking Nintendo game.
I just remembered something critical.
So there you have it.
That's that.
Oh yeah, no, is it about vape jelly?
No, it's about cocaine.
As a result of the longevity drug, like one of the things that people have actually been talking about, and this was something that I experienced day one, is that I can actually remember my dreams, and they're more lucid than they've been in years.
I've had that as a drug side effect before.
I wonder.
It wore off.
Well, that's interesting. Hmm.
I wonder, like, well, so what happens when you have somebody like me who's typically has that experience? Do I get even more? I want more.
You basically get a second life because
only
when you go to sleep, you wake up.
I'm in. I'm going to use all the pose orbs.
God damn it.
I think we come back to that like every week.
We really do. It's a tired joke and it's redundant. It's about a game that some people play, but most people don't. Anyway. That's cool. John, hit me up with those links, and I'll hit all of you up with those links on this episode's page.
Golfers. Links.
Sausage links. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. We're doing some great comedy here.
Yep.
Absolutely. And that means it's time to go.
Yeah, it's time to... When the jokes start falling short, well, you either hit the beginning of the episode or the end of the episode. So that's where we must
Tony's
be.
Involved.
Or Tony's involved. We'll see you in 2 weeks with an all-new episode of Nerdy Show. Yeah.